it's super sad because the best Korean food are these old grandma's places that have been making the same
dish
for years.
But it's like no one young is trying to like take. Yeah, no one's trying to take that over. That's why all the markets are dying.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the shijangs and, you know, all of those like old traditions are all going away.
Perfect example, like jjajangmyeon, which is, how do you
call it? Black bean noodle dish.
Yeah. Black bean noodle dish. My father had ate at the same restaurant since he was a kid. It was open for like 30, 40 years. We went back together as adults. The owners recognized my father from a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been making jjajangmyeon for, what, yeah, for years. Their kids take over and sell the restaurant for $8 million because that became a very well
the real estate.
Oh my God.
So it's like, that's exactly what's happening. Like,
welcome to Get Down with K-Town. I'm your host, Esther Choi. Hey guys. Today we are talking all things fashion. It just happens to be Fashion Week here in New York, and I'm so happy to get a chance to sit down with two of my buddies here in town from Korea to showcase their brand, Terrence Kim and Kevin Kim. Welcome.
Hello.
Two brothers from New Jersey started a Korean streetwear brand, Izhae, based out of Seoul, Korea. Izhae has found huge success locally and globally, really spreading the Korean love through fashion. So I just went to their show yesterday, and let me tell you, freaking unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, so dope. The looks were sick. So much swag. We need a new word for swag. Seriously. You guys really killed it. Congratulations.
Thank you. Have you been to a show before?
I've been to fashion shows, but Izhae, this was the first one. First Izhae show. So Izhae. Mm-hmm. It means second generation.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to name your brand Izhae?
I think that what people first think is we called it Izhae because we're second generation Korean Americans. I mean, that's part of the reason why, but also we think the main reason is pretty much like we get a lot of inspiration from previous generations and more traditional Korean things.
Mm-hmm.
And we take those things and reinterpret it through our own lens, through product and content. So that's kind of like the main reason why it's the name brand Izhae.
Who came up with Izhae, by the way?
I did, yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Kevin's the creative, right?
Right.
Yeah, so he handles everything on the product side. And okay. I do most of like the marketing, sales, and the other stuff.
So you're like, Terrence, you're kind of like the business person, business operations, and finance as well? Or
actually, the weird thing is I do the finance stuff too, but we also have like accountants that we work with and stuff like that. But because I studied finance, even though
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting because you're the designer.
Right. So I do all the design and creative, but then I also do the numbers stuff too.
Nice. And you're like marketing, operations.
Yeah, I mean, we're a small team, so we kind of dabble in everything, but he focuses more on the product side.
Got it. So Kevin came up with Izhae.
Yes.
And how did you guys start, like, working on the brand? Like, I know you started from wanting to do shoes, right? And you were in China.
I'm going to ask you how you knew that story.
Because I do my homework, guys. So you went to China to start a sneaker brand?
Okay, so we didn't go to China. Well, Terrence is 1 year older than me. So Terrence, after he graduated university, he went out to China. This was, like, 2008, 2009. And that's when the job market was kind of terrible. So like, it was kind of difficult for people to like get good jobs then, right? So there was an option for Terrence to go to Hangzhou, which is like a city, like I guess west of Shanghai, to learn Mandarin at a Chinese language program at a university.
Okay.
Because our father actually spent a lot of time in China prior, and he was always like, China's the future. You got to go. You definitely got to learn Chinese.
So do you speak Chinese?
I do. I mean, I used to speak it every day, and that was, what, 8 years ago, so I forgot a lot of, like, the vocab and stuff. But every time I do go back to China, it, like, comes back to me slowly.
So, nice. Yeah. Awesome. And it's Mandarin?
Mandarin, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so he was out there for a year, and then he was telling me how crazy it was. So he's like, you have to come. So
a crazy fun.
Why? Oh, crazy fun, because you were partying.
Yeah, I was partying.
Partying and, you know, living in a new country.
Right. So then, while we were both out there, we were, like, we're always interested in streetwear and sneakers. That's how we kind of got into this whole thing. It was like we were like collecting sneakers online and selling them, and then that led to like denim and led to streetwear. And this is like early streetwear.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had this idea of like we want to start a shoe brand because while we were in China, like we were actually in the proximity of like factories and markets, you know. So we knew that if we wanted to get things made, we could just have to go out there and do it, right?
Yeah.
But we had zero money, zero experience, and we're just young with the idea of doing it. So we try to make a few shoe samples. Obviously, nothing worked. And then how how Issei started was we visited Korea for the first time while we were in China, right?
Wait, first time like ever?
I mean, we were like kids. Yeah. I barely remember that.
Middle school, I think, was the last time we were in Korea before then.
Young adults, we went to Korea for the first time from China. And then we ended up meeting this older gentleman who has a fashion brand already.
Okay.
And we were kind of just chopping it up with him, telling him, like, these ideas we had and how, like, the internet's shaping, you know, mm-hmm. e-commerce and marketing and how they're, mm-hmm. how all the things are being shaped by, like, the youth and, like, just all mm-hmm. these new ideas mm-hmm. that were, like, kind of, like, foreign to the older generation at the time. And then he's like, oh, let's make some samples. So, like, with our ideas and his, like, structure, we were making samples, flying back and forth between China and Korea.
What kind of samples? Samples like clothes shoes, or
yeah,
shoes?
It was like shoes, bags. It was, like, shoes and bags in the beginning, right? And then it was going to lead to clothing, but we started off as accessories first.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, oh, you should come move to Korea and we should start this brand together. So we're like, all right, amazing.
So at this point, was it Issei?
This guy was doing a lot of like Korean like natural dyeing. And mm-hmm. we were using those fabrics onto like modern silhouettes, like van slip-ons. Like we did that in an all organic, Korean organic dye
thing.
Oh, that's
cool.
Yeah.
Like backpacks, like we made it all with Korean natural mm-hmm. dye. So it's just kind of applying these older things into like new ways, right? Which mm-hmm. is the DNA of our brand right now. But long story short.
And you guys were doing it together as brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
With this guy.
Right, right. So just us three and his team kind of working on it. And we're just the young people, just like giving the ideas. And he was kind of like doing everything else. But mm-hmm. He told us to move. And we finally ended up moving to Korea from China. And then when we got to Korea, he didn't want to do it anymore.
Why? Was it you guys? Like you guys were like difficult brothers?
No, it wasn't even that. I think he just got cold feet at the end of the
yeah.
day.
Why? What do you mean?
He has his own agenda. He has his own mm-hmm. brand and okay. stuff like that. I think he just got excited with like working with new mm-hmm. kids in the beginning. And then when it came down to actually executing and putting the money down on it, I think it became more of like a reality. And then I guess he had to like...
He got scared. He didn't want to take risks.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe that's what it was. I don't know. If I was him, I wouldn't do it either. Cause like we have no experience. Like why? We're like 23 mm-hmm. at the time. Like why are we gonna invest in two young, inexperienced kids to really start a brand? That's a lot of money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was so like we kind of moved to Korea. We had nothing. We were like, wow, we just moved here, mad credit card debt, like nothing.
Yeah, and also at that point, like, we've been working with this guy for, what, 3 months?
Yeah, right.
Oh, it was only 3 months?
Yeah, yeah.
But you already made some samples.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got stuff going, uh-huh. so we really thought we were going to, like,
you got a taste of the industry.
Exactly, right. And then we got there, and he didn't want to do it, which was a blessing because that's how Issei started.
Yeah.
We were, like, so, like,
yeah.
All right, let's just do it our own.
Blessing mm-hmm. in disguise.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. right.
And how did you do that? Like, where did you come up with the funding? Like, how did you... I know in the beginning you have to be like super scrappy as entrepreneurs,
for sure.
right?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I mean, I think so after that fallout, we were basically like left stranded in Korea. I think we had a couple thousand dollars to our name, 2,000-3,000, and then I think we made 15 bags maybe. And then we just
that
sold.
Was like the first.
That was the first production run. Mm-hmm. 15 bags. You spent all our money, but we were able to sell that on the internet to like a few different countries, and then we were living off. That money we made from the bags for like
5 months.
Five, 6 months.
Oh,
until
wow.
we were super broke.
Real scrappy. Uh-huh. Like ramen and, you know. Like,
of course, the early days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing about us at that age, we were so young and naive that mm-hmm. it worked in our favor because we didn't really know what could go wrong. We just kept working at it, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And then we caught a break actually, like, We went to FedEx, went to Kinko's, printed out this janky business plan mm-hmm. from my 4-year degree at business school.
So you actually wrote a business plan, though?
Yeah, it was like total shit, obviously. You know, I had to like look on Google like what to do of like how to make a business plan. Obviously, you don't
need
to do
that. Dude, I remember writing my first business plan. It was just like that. Right, you just like Google it. Yeah, how do you, there's like a template,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it was. And like trying to figure out how to pitch to investors because that was like, we need money. Like,
uh-huh.
And I remember it was like, we had maybe 2 weeks of money left. We're like, okay, if we run out of money in 2 weeks probably, we probably have to just go back to America and figure it out on our own, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that felt like such a failure for us, you know? Like, we were out, like, we're probably one of the few people that left the States after university mm-hmm. to, like, try other things. So to us, like, failing and moving back home with our tail between our legs was, like, the worst
that's
for us. You know, I'd rather, like...
쪽팔려.
Exactly.
Meaning very embarrassing.
Yeah. So, like, I would be so shameful of that.
But anyway, also, too, like... When we started the shoe brand, or it wasn't even a brand, but when we tried to start a shoe brand in China, we were already sharing that on like my Tumblr and our blogs.
Mm-hmm. So this was before social media.
Before. So we were already putting content out there that, hey, we're working on something. And then that didn't really go anywhere. And then we started posting again and sharing again about, you know, doing bag samples and, you know, and all that, and starting Issei and everything.
Yeah.
So were the bag samples Issei?
Yeah,
it was Issei.
Yeah,
okay.
It was Issei from the start, right? Mm. Very early Issei, mm-hmm. part-time Issei.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. Uh-huh. But we ended up, I'll just speed this story up, but like, we ended up making that business plan and pitching it to a guy who owned a company, a culture company, and then he pretty much, the deal was he'll own 100% of Issei, but he'll pay us a salary and he'll pay for our apartment.
Okay.
And we were like, all right, let's 100% doing that.
Yeah, and he'll fund Issei for a year.
And he'll fund it, right. But then he owns the company.
He owns the company, right.
Okay.
That's
so,
how it started.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, so about a year and a half, we're kind of learning the ropes on this guy's financing. It was such a blessing because we mm-hmm. learned so much and made all mm-hmm. these mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year and a half goes by, we put out, two collections, mm-hmm. bad collections that did pretty well, actually.
Yeah, they did really well.
Considering that we just started, and then, unfortunately, that guy's company ended up folding, but mm-hmm. he was super cool. He's like, I'll just give you guys back everything with you guys' ownership. He says yours again. And then we had like maybe 20 or 30 grand left in stock.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you guys could take this for like pennies on the dollar.
So, why was he so gracious like that?
Honestly, he's a young guy, too.
He's a young guy, but uh-huh. he has way bigger business to deal with. Issei is just like a little
okay.
thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter to him what happens mm-hmm. to it, which we're super grateful for. But then so we bought that. We bought the stock and we flipped it a week later to one buyer. So we had 30 grand all of a sudden for seed money.
Wow.
So that's how we like really...
So kind of lucky.
Super lucky, mm-hmm. right. So that's how we kind of got like... And then from there we just built it.
Such a long story and yeah. crazy
that's
story.
That's kind
what happened
of like... It's such a blessing though, this guy.
Oh my God.
This random
such
guy.
Such a blessing, yeah.
Who is this random guy that...
I don't know if I want to put him out there like that.
Oh, okay.
But he is... He's from a very wealthy family, so
okay.
and he has means like that and resources. So I think to him, he just wanted to give us a chance, and we're so like
yeah.
grateful for this dude to do that. And
yeah,
so that's kind of how.
I mean,
happened.
You guys are like super cool brothers. So
I think
I'm
he just
sure
likes
like
us.
Yeah.
Like you know, we're in Korea. We don't speak the language. Like you know, we're just.
Well, you don't speak the language.
At the time,
at the time, man.
Wait, you didn't speak Korean?
Barely, like very like little things we learned from home, pretty mm-hmm. much. Yeah, so it was like. I guess he just like it was cute, maybe.
You know what? Come to think, I don't think I've ever heard you guys speak Korean. I'm gonna test you later.
I feel like you tested me in Korea.
did I test you in Korea? Probably. So that's how you guys started the company with mm-hmm. the $30,000 seed money, and at this point, the company is now 100% yours.
Mm-hmm.
That's like so amazing. Like he didn't ask for anything back. Like he didn't ask
no.
you guys.
No.
Nothing.
And then he ended up coming back into our company
later.
A couple years later mm-hmm. at NBC.
Yeah.
Incredible. Talk to me about this concept of infusing traditional and modern Korean elements into your brand. Like, what does that mean?
So I think that this can apply for a lot of people who are born in another country that are innately another heritage or something. So when we went to Korea, it's like we're seeing Korean things for the first time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, all of us here grew up in America. We don't really experience Korean culture other than maybe food from home, right? But
mm-hmm.
when you go back to the country, mainland, you see everything Korean, including architecture, design, food, like literally all facets of Korean culture you see,
mm-hmm.
right? So to us, seeing that and experiencing that for the first time as Korean Americans, it was all foreign, right? And exciting. And in a way for us, it's like you're seeing what's beautiful about your mm-hmm. heritage for the first time in your life.
And you were super inspired, I guess.
Super inspired. And then even like these traditional older things that Koreans, local Koreans aren't really like paying attention to because they grew up with it.
Mm-hmm.
To us, it's like, dude, that's amazing. Like we look at like an old building or even like Korean natural dye.
Mm-hmm.
We're so drawn to that because not only because of history and the story, but visually, it's like we've never seen it before in America.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, like we're like rediscovering our identity, having an appreciation for our culture for the first time, because I think a lot of Asian Americans in America, like you kind of feel a little bit of a shame of being Korean American while you're growing up, maybe
mm-hmm.
you racism.
Do you guys have that story? Like of
I mean, I think
being,
everyone has that story.
Shame.
I mean, I'm sure everyone has that growing up here
mm-hmm.
during our time, especially, right? So we're like very prideful about our culture for the first time. So then we wanted to like use those elements and kind of like mix our Americanness to it and kind of showcase that in a brand to like Western culture mm-hmm. and like kind of spread that around. So that was like the initial seed for the idea.
The inspiration behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so obviously you're very passionate about like sharing your Korean heritage. That's a big part of what the brand Ise is, right? Do you feel that that's because you were not born in Korea? Do you think that your passion grew because you were born here?
100%.
100%, yeah. Because like he was saying, when we got to Korea and we were experiencing all these cultural things, like growing up, we were kind of like you said, ashamed about our culture, like, you know. Like all these examples, even like bringing
not ashamed. Moments of embarrassment.
Yeah, embarrassment.
Of course.
Like, bringing Korean food to like school, you know, stuff like little things like that.
Of course,
yeah.
Like kimchi. Exactly.
Yeah,
very
or bringing
smelly.
Friends over, you know. Yeah. So like that was kind of like always in our mind. Mm-hmm. But like going to Korea and kind of experiencing all these things for the first time, like we were really proud and like this like shit is so dope. And we have to kind of like share these things with like our friends, family, and like in the Western world, like through fashion. And that's like kind of like.
Yeah, and I don't think local Koreans would have the same appreciation.
Yeah, definitely.
Grew up there, you know what I mean?
So are there any other brands that are doing that in Korea?
I don't think the way that we're doing it, to be honest. I know that it's kind of weird. In Korea, there's sometimes a stigma from local Koreans about Korean-inspired things. Like people mm-hmm. try to reinterpret like the hanbok, which is mm-hmm. kind of like the Korean clothing. A lot of Korean people kind of think that's like little... What's chonsuro? Like kind of cheesy? Or maybe
cheesy.
Yeah.
Because yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think local Koreans are more... They like things that are from Western countries more than their own. But for us, it's kind of flipped, you know? Like, we're from the West. We're too used mm-hmm. to it. So, like, mm-hmm. things that we like about Korea, maybe Koreans wouldn't see it that way. And vice versa, too. Like, when Koreans come to America, they might be so, like, New York City. But if we grew up here, then it's kind of like, it's just whatever.
It's like New Yorkers that go to Times Square to, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly. They avoid it, you know,
right,
if anything.
Right. It's like, mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's that same idea.
Yeah.
Your company is based in Seoul. I think you said that a lot of your customers are actually not in Korea. They're like global.
Well, there's two reasons for that. Like one, the goal was to kind of like make Korean-inspired things for the Western market, mm-hmm. kind of like spread that culture around. And number two, it's like we didn't know how to speak Korean.
Yeah,
so
we didn't
like,
know anyone in Korea. So
yeah, how do you sell a product to a customer that you can't communicate with? Really,
uh-huh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Even the struck. But we already had like. American e-commerce, we knew how to do that.
Why did you decide to stay in Seoul and do it in Korea?
Because I think for us, like, if we want to authentically do Korean-inspired fashion, I think a major part of that is to be living there and experiencing the culture firsthand. And like, and aside from that too, it's like Korean fabrics and all these like manufacturing techniques.
Sourcing.
Yeah, sourcing. And you can't get that outside of Korea, really. So like,
and we were learning like as we went, you know. We had to be in Korea to like learn these things every day and apply it to
mm-hmm.
what
so,
we made.
You're living your culture, basically.
Right, mm-hmm. yeah. And we wanted to be there at the end of the day, mm-hmm. you know. So
all of your pieces are made in Seoul?
They were when the start, but now it's like half-half. Like as volume grew, like mm-hmm. we had to move stuff like outside of the country, like China. But like we still do like a lot of production locally too, yeah.
But you're now moving,
half moving
to
yeah.
LA.
Yeah.
So you're now finally kind of moving your production over?
Well, I think the LA move is more for like marketing and sales. That's kind of like more of the reason why we're moving on.
And business development.
Yeah, business mm-hmm. development.
Yeah.
What kind of challenges are you anticipating to face?
I mean,
should I think about
the biggest thing for me, I think, is just living in America again. Because we've been living in Asia for the past 10 years, we became adults there, and mm-hmm. Korea has really become our home. Like, I miss Seoul right now, actually. I
mean, really?
Yeah, just being here for like a week, yeah. So I think kind of just adjusting to living back in America, I think is going to be a small challenge in the beginning, but mm-hmm. I think for the business, it's going to really help us a lot. So that's what we're really excited for.
So talk to me about this year's collection. What was the inspiration behind that?
Right, so... It's actually a good leeway to that because this collection was kind of like really focused on what the core design aesthetic is of the brand. Because our previous seasons, it was kind of like more tangible
concepts.
Like, you know, one
what
season,
do you mean by that?
So like our last couple of seasons, for example, it's like this is based off Korean protest culture, which is a very you can think about what that looks like already, or mm-hmm. like riots, you know, protests, like mm-hmm. a very visual thing, tangible thing. And then the previous season was like, oh, let's picture Ise as like a company like Samsung, we're like a huge conglomerate and we have multiple things. And so like these are tangible concepts, right? Mm-hmm. But this season, we kind of really focus on what the design aesthetic and what the core design DNA of the brand is, right? We always look at Korean architecture and furniture from back in the day, right? And a couple of the design philosophies from back then was like symmetry, balance, and proportion. So like an example of that would be if a guy's making a table, he would cut a piece of wood right in the middle and spread it open so the left and right side are completely symmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives that sense of balance. So a lot of these types of ideas were infused in like Korean like design and furniture making and architecture design and stuff like that. Like everything had a purpose, everything had balance.
Mm-hmm.
This idea of symmetry was really like existent there. So like those things really like resonated with us and then we wanted to kind of bring that into like the concept of the brand. And so when you look at some of the clothing, it's very subtle, but you know, we bring a lot of like square paneling and right angles and making sure that nothing's asymmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like the basis of the concept for that one. Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Thank you.
And even learning about that, like we had to be in Korea to learn about those ideas.
Because you had to visit a furniture maker.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, what you just like randomly thought, okay, it's going to be based off.
We went to like an antique furniture market and there's this guy there that has been selling, you know, traditional Korean furniture for like 30 or years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just like, you know, checking it out. And then we start a conversation with him. And he just kind of schools us like about, the ideals behind traditional Korean furniture design.
So it was like a random outing you went and then you were inspired by this guy.
Yeah, it was random. But like I know for us, especially the first few years of being in Korea, we were so actively pursuing like learning about Korean design things that we were like meeting everybody we could and like going to all these markets, traveling around the whole country, going to different like natural dye teachers. And granted, all these people that we're talking to, they're above 50. They're all old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A different generation.
Exactly. And you know that Korean thing where like the older generation, they don't want to take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
Chengyo you, make you food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So all these older people like natural dyers, furniture makers, like these fabric people, all older generation, they really took the time to like teach us about all this stuff, the history, the ideas behind it. They make us food, they make us kimchi, they make us banchan to take home because they know that we're two Korean-Americans with no family.
So how are you guys communicating with these?
A lot of hand signals, a lot of broken Korean.
Uh-huh.
But I think the enthusiasm we had.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Koreans, as a cultural, they're kind of like a little more conservative and shy, whereas we're coming with this American energy that was loud and maybe obnoxious at times, but like, I think they were like, okay, these guys are trying. And we're like,
they liked it.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of like translating and like.
But they end up learning some English. We end up learning Korean.
Yeah, and I think it's fun for them because they don't have, these older generation guys, they don't have the opportunity to communicate with young people because young people are not interested in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Especially in Korea, right?
Mm-hmm. Especially Korea, right? So like 10, 20, 30 years, like all these things are going to die out because younger people are not carrying it on for the most part. And this goes to food especially.
I was going to say, it's really sad that nobody, like, everyone's doing, like, modern food, and they don't want to do anything traditional, right?
Yeah.
But, like, what about, like, what about old techniques and the methods that the preservation, who's going to teach that?
Exactly. Yeah. I think we talked about this a little bit when we're getting drinks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's super sad because the best Korean food are these old grandma's places that have been making the same dish for years.
But it's like no one young is trying to take that over. That's why all the markets are dying.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the shijangs and, you know, all those like old traditions are all like going away.
Perfect example. Like jajangmyeon, which is like
black bean noodle dish.
Yeah.
Black bean noodle dish. My father ate at the same restaurant since he was a kid. It was open for like 30, 40 years. We went back together as adults. The owners recognized my father from a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been making jajangmyeon for 30 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Their kids take over and sell the restaurant for $8 million because that became a very wealthy
the real estate.
Area.
Oh, my God.
So it's like that's exactly what's happening. Like, the parents are
wait, that just
working.
Happened, like, right
it
now?
It just happened probably in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
So no more jajangmyeon restaurant.
That spot's gone, and that was a great spot, you know? But then, like, the kids don't take it on. It's hard work, but their parents grinded it out for that long.
Yeah, but at least they had a payout, that Chinese restaurant. Like, a lot of these places, like, the younger generation is not interested in just doing that kind of work. It's a lot of hard work.
Still.
So sad, yeah.
It is very sad. That's like a very deep conversation. That's,
yeah, that can go really
Everyone knows family business can be very hard. Mm-hmm. I know this because I work with my sister as well. She's my partner.
Oh, my
God. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Younger or older?
She's older. Oh. And she does all the finances and like business side of things. And obviously, I'm the creative. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, mm-hmm. right?
What's the age gap?
2 years.
Oh.
And you guys are what?
Like,
2 years?
18 months. Pretty much. Yeah. 2 years.
We're not 2 years either. We're like 20 months apart.
Okay. Like, same thing then. Probably the exact same dynamic.
Exactly. So like, how is that? I mean, do you guys fight?
Pros and cons, I think. Yeah. But I think there's more pros, actually.
We fought a lot in the beginning.
Oh, my gosh, right? Those first few years.
Because you don't know how to divvy up the responsibility yet. You don't know who has what skill set mm-hmm. yet. So you want to do everything together. So that's when you fight the most.
Mm-hmm. And also,
stubborn.
But on top of that, like living in Korea and being so broke and not knowing your environment, like we had so much stress and we had no one else. Like we couldn't take it out on anyone else or.
Yeah. Like, but each other.
Yeah,
right?
But each other, exactly. So I think that also contributed to the fights.
But on the flip side, working with family, like the trust level is.
I know. It's unreal.
Yeah, it's the best trust. You can't lose. You can't, like, break up. I don't know if that's the word. Break up with your brother. You
can't, right? Exactly. No matter how much you want to run away, mm-hmm. you can't.
So even if you fight a lot, whatever, like, at the end of the day, having a trust between business partners is so, so crucial. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I'm sure you share that with your sister, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, just, like, the creative direction for the brand and our vision for the brand. Because we grew up together and have, like, very similar experiences, like, everything we envision for the company is always aligned. Like, we're not, you know what I'm saying?
Like, there's never a clash. Mm-hmm. Like,
you know exactly what you guys want to do. Well,
luckily, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not like that for all siblings, too, what I've noticed. So, like, I think maybe you and your sister, us, we have a kind of a unique relationship, mm-hmm. you know, compared to other people that I've noticed, yeah.
Yeah, so the mission is the most important thing.
Exactly, mm-hmm. yeah.
So what's the future?
L.A., right?
Yeah,
LA,
I think
opening our second office there. Uh-huh. And then in between that, yeah, you know, just new collections, a bunch of projects, a lot of collaborations happening next season, and then, yeah.
But Russell, Terrence, you said you wanted to, like, expand on the brand and not just be fashion.
The idea for the beginning is to apply this concept of reinterpreting Korean elements into, like, all product categories. Mm-hmm. But definitely now, we definitely have to focus on clothing mm-hmm. and kind of make that more solid before, like, transitioning. Or not transitioning, but offering other, like, lifestyle products. But mm-hmm. we always talk about it. We want to do, like, furniture later.
Yeah,
yeah, like the future.
Yeah, kitchenware, stationery, like, whatever.
Lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Lifestyle, mm-hmm. everything, yeah. Like, even, like, a hotel or something like that would be, like, big. Mm-hmm. Like, you design the whole. Like, you know, Muji does that, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so, like.
Does Muji do clothes too?
They do everything. Yeah. So like Muji was a big reference to like, oh, we want maybe something like Muji. Not like that type of brand, but like the fact that they do everything.
Mm-hmm. With all
one
products.
Concept, yeah, mm-hmm. which we love. Yeah, so.
Everything with like traditional Korean elements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. no way, right. Like reinterpret,
It's like what I'm doing with Korean food, you guys are doing with like product clothing. And clothing, exactly. Fashion. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Love it. Obviously, I have something special for you guys.
That's what I'm excited about.
Yeah. I was curious what was in the bag.
Yeah, what is it?
So I made you your favorite Korean dish. I love that you guys picked chon.
Yeah.
I love chon as well.
Chon. We never called it chon growing up.
Okay.
Like we were talking about that.
What did you call it?
Jijim.
Jijim. What is that?
Have you heard of that word before?
No.
Yeah, none of my friends have. So
what is that?
It
sounds like
it's a country slang. So our mother's side, our grandmother, they're all from this area called Jinju in South mm-hmm. Korea. Mm-hmm. Our whole family grew up calling it Jijim. Like I've never heard chon from them.
Yeah. I never heard chon until I left America, and then I would always refer to chon as Jijim.
And I remember like going to a restaurant with my friends, and I was like, "Oh, let's get the Jijim or whatever," and like no one knew what I was talking about. Yeah.
I also made you cold noodles, my version, at Mukbar, because I own a noodle shop. Uh-huh. So I was like, okay, I have to make them. The
awesome.
I'm really inspired by mukbang. You know, mukbar is based off of mukbang. Like why I came up with the word.
But mukbang. I feel like you opened mukbar before mukbang was actually like a thing, though.
So it was
early adopting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a thing, but like not as big as it is now. Yeah,
right.
It was very early on, but I was into it from like the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then that's like what really inspired the name.
Oh, cool.
I love watching people eat.
Yeah.
I love it. So, whole noodles, mm-hmm. Which is what, bibimguksu? The one we do at Mukbar, it's actually one of my favorite dishes because it's almost like eating a salad, right? Mm-hmm. But the noodle, so the noodles are ramen noodles. Okay. But these noodles are kind of based off of like shin-ramen noodles. Ooh. So the thickness is the same, but it's fresh noodles.
Got you.
We get our noodles made by this vendor, Sun Noodles, and mm-hmm. it's like basically the Ferrari of noodles.
Really?
It's really delicious.
Yeah, I've seen like short docs on them on YouTube and stuff. Yeah.
So good. And then we do a lot of like pickled vegetables. We do like pickled shiitake mushrooms, obviously kimchi, spinach, bean sprouts, pickled daikon, cucumber, scallion, a poached egg. Mm. And this sauce is like a traditional like jjajang. And then your jjim.
Mm-hmm.
That word is so funny. is your mouth watering? Okay, so I have two types for you. One is our seafood chun, which is shrimp and squid with chives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this really thin like rice crepe batter. So it's like super, super thin and crispy.
So
when you have it fresh at the restaurant, it's like so crispy. It's amazing.
But how it should be, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and then the other one's like traditional, like kimchi chon. And I toasted it in the conveyor belt toaster.
Nice.
Which worked really well, actually.
Yeah.
So enjoy, guys.
Okay, I'm excited.
I'm going to hit the noodles first.
Okay.
Actually,
yeah.
You're going to hit the noodles first? Terrence is going to try
the noodles
first.
Okay.
So this was actually one of my favorite dishes that my mom used to make me, like, growing
up.
Okay,
how did your mom make it? Well, you know what? Eat that first, and then I want you to...
Wow, so fresh. It's crazy, because my mom didn't have time to make me this, because we were so busy with Fashion Week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but you wanted it.
I wanted it. I asked her.
Uh-huh.
She's like, oh, I'll try if I have time, but... I'm so happy I'm eating this now.
I love this, like, sound, right?
So
oh,
it's
man.
It's nice and crispy, because when chon is not crispy, I really don't like it.
You get sad, right?
I get sad, because, like, the flavor's still good, but I don't like when it gets soggy. But this is perfect. This is really good.
When me and my sister used to eat chon growing up, we would only eat the outer parts and then just, like, leave the middle.
Yeah, leave the middle.
This is really good.
Yeah?
Really good.
So how did your mom make her bibimguksu?
I mean, different vegetables. Mm-hmm. I feel like my mom had maybe more cabbage in her or something.
She puts a lot more greens in it, I think.
Like greens and cabbage and...
Right.
She puts way too many greens, though. Because she's like a healthy...
It's like a salad.
But, yeah. But this is...
I think that was her way of like...
Forcing us.
A salad when we were kids. Like making it with noodles. But there must be like a salad with noodles instead of noodles with greens. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was still good.
Talk to me about the chon.
The chon, our grandmother, it was usually only one ingredient. It was, what do you call this? Puchu.
Chives.
Chives, yeah. It was just only chives, right?
And I think...
very flat, like pounded.
No, but it was like really spicy too.
Oh.
She put peppers in there?
Yeah, cheongnyang gochu.
Oh, cheongnyang gochu?
I think, like little thin slices.
Cheongnyang gochu is like the spiciest Korean pepper.
Mm.
Yeah.
This is like the Korean pizza,
right?
Exactly, yeah. They call it a pancake, but like I like to compare it with like pizza.
Or pizza.
Yeah.
This is really good as a
wrap. All right, let me get that sauce. Now you should try the noodles.
The kimchi one is just, it's very like traditional. Just
classic.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite dish that you serve at the
restaurant? Oh, wow. Someone asking me a question. Mm-hmm. Oh, at the restaurant?
Yeah, because, okay, let's do both. At the restaurant and home cooking.
My the dish that I... like my last meal on earth, it will always be kimchi jjigae.
Really?
Kimchi jjigae, I'm like a kimchi fanatic. Like I love kimchi so much.
Mm-hmm.
And kimchi jjigae is just like something that my mom made pretty much like all the time because she didn't really cook. But she knew how to make kimchi jjigae. So I love kimchi jjigae. And at the restaurant, though, we have a kimchi ramen and it's based off of kimchi jjigae.
Okay.
But I'd say my favorite dish, I really like the pajeon that we do. I really like that. But we also do like a tteokbokki that I really like.
Because
I do it with like a brown butter and I get it really crispy.
Whoa.
Okay.
And then I add like bacon. And then the sauce is really special because it's this homemade gochujang. Like, it's aged 18 months.
Wow.
Some grandma makes it in her, like, garage in Jersey.
That's the best.
Yeah. So the sauce is really good. And then we add, like, poached egg and kimchi. It's like a modern take on tteokbokki, but Only because that. Like sometimes like tteokbokki for me, like the street one, is like too dense. Like it's too much like
duck. So yours is like thin.
It's super thin and it gets like really crispy but still like chewy on the inside.
These noodles are amazing.
You like that, Chun?
So good.
Really good.
Is it's it crispy? It's nice and crispy.
Super crispy.
It's a good combo,
right? Good combo, yeah. I love...
People are so jealous right now.
This is so good. This is so good. One of the
best bibimbap you've ever had. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a
Dude, you know she had like a few episodes on 88 Rising?
Oh, did you watch those videos?
I saw a lot of your content. It's like kimchi making ASMR.
Yeah. And you know what? We shot 10 episodes, but they ended up going more towards music, so they stopped editing them. The food stuff that they did was really good, too. Because
it's such a big part of Asian culture, I feel like, right?
Food is
like,
everything.
You know
what I mean? Yeah.
I think it's an introduction to a lot of culture for people, you know? Yeah. It's food, yeah.
I introduce people to Korean culture through food. Because I feel like any interest in a culture always starts with the food. It's the easiest way, right?
100%.
Once you fall in love with the food, it's like then you're 100%. Curious about the culture.
Was spam in the kimchi jjigae like a big thing for you? Or
yes.
It was, right?
Spam.
More
anything?
Than tuna?
Oh, man. For me,
some people grew up on tuna kimchi jjigae.
Yeah. For me, it's spam. Mm-hmm. I freaking love spam. Pork in kimchi jjigae is always my favorite. Any type of pork product.
Okay. Did you guys do this too when you were kids? I feel like this is very like poor Korean food, like a comfort food. Just having water, mulmara, like water in your rice.
Water in your rice and then you eat kimchi.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I still
crazy
do that.
Is it like thinking about that dish though? It's so insane to me.
Yeah.
Like we would just, I guess Korean people would just put water
in their rice and eat it as a porridge.
Yeah. Right.
And it just, that really reminds me of like nostalgic home, grandma's house, like spam, kimchi, and mulmara, like rice in the water. That's it.
So actually, I haven't heard that in a while, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I
kind of
want that. Or even I'm going to do that.
Like just putting soy sauce and a little
egg, rice. Butter.
Soy oil, a little butter into rice and just eating that.
Yeah.
That was like a whole, like, I loved that growing up, too.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for joining the
thank
show.
Thank you for all this. This was fun.
Where can we find you?
Well, most of our content is on Instagram, so the handle is IseSoul, IiseSeoul. Our website is also iseiisc.co.
That's pretty much it.
Pretty much it. You guys don't want to share your personal Instagram.
just look at the brand. Yeah.
That's what's important.
Thank you so much.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. Get Down with K-Town is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by our executive producer, Christopher Hasiotis, and me, Esther Choi. Follow me on all social media at Choi Bites. And I'd also like to thank our producer, editor, and mixer, Marcy DePina. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.